and gentlemen, welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this, Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of June, 2026. We got a big show for you today. We're going to be talking, of course, about a lot of breaking news, the latest with the Iran negotiations, as well as some drama going on with old Dr. Anthony Fauci. And as we cruise on the cutting edge, the razor's edge of today's news, we also need to go back in time, remind ourselves of how the hell we got here. This is a fantastic compilation by Maze at Maze Moore on X. A little reminder of the insanity that beset us during the COVID era. Let's watch.
President Trump wrote on Twitter, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." Don't let it dominate your life?
In terms of responding to a comment like that, it's gross.
It's okay to be afraid of COVID, and it's okay that it's dominating your life.
Everyone should be afraid of COVID.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
I can't come in, Mom. It's because of this flu thing.
We won't be free of this pandemic until we listen to the acknowledged truth. Listen to the scientists.
Science is truth.
You know, science is truth.
What is the impact to public health when people are openly questioning the science?
Now is the time to do what you're told.
By not hearing the truth, by not listening to the scientists, they are prolonging how bad the economy will be.
When I see somebody out in the world who's not wearing a mask, I instantly think you are a threat, or you are selfish, or you are a COVID denier, and you definitely haven't been vaccinated.
You don't wear a mask, get the fuck out.
What does this have?
Are you vaccinated?
I am triple vaccinated.
So why are you wearing a mask?
Seek out the scientists and listen to their advice.
Listen to scientists.
Listen to the scientists.
Trust the experts.
We're going to trust science. We're going to trust the experts.
Parents who say, well, I need to do my own research, makes you think of that cartoon I saw of the tombstone that said, I did my own research.
Republicans have given their voters license to believe whatever they want to believe.
Heard somebody saying, listen to the scientists. Do that.
Let's listen to the scientists.
That phrase, do your own research, it's popping up a lot in conversations about coronavirus and about COVID vaccines. Doing your own research, it seems so innocent, but it can have serious consequences. Renee, what are the roots of this phrase? I feel like I used to hear it around QAnon craziness.
Tase somebody over a mask. Tasing this lady over not wearing a damn mask.
If some jerk exposed my mother to COVID because they didn't want to wear a mask, I would want to kill them.
We can watch the experts, but we shouldn't be listening to Trump, a non-medical professional.
Well, the answer is listen to Bill Gates. Bill's right about a lot of things, and he's at the steep learning curve in global health.
And we're really seeing just how important it is to follow science.
Yes, yes, exactly. And we need to listen to scientists.
The idea that people are questioning the science behind the vaccine.
The science checks out. Even if you don't believe in the science, you think you're tough enough and you're healthy enough and you're young enough, the scientists were right all along. Eventually, the science catches up with you.
Are we doing more harm than good by questioning the science behind J&J?
Trust that vaccine.
Trust the experts.
Listen to the medical experts.
Trust the experts.
If you don't understand the science, you don't know what you're fighting.
Just let the experts speak.
So maybe you should just shut up right now.
You don't want to take advice from your golf buddy or from your aunt. You want to listen to the scientists.
Can we all stop saying, I need to do my own research?
You see the ultimate effects of what happens when you don't listen to the scientists.
This isn't about being scared. This is about scaring us straight.
Science, science, and science. Only listen to the scientist.
If we follow the science, imagine, instead of staying locked up in their rooms, they're able to hug their grandchildren.
This isn't about freedom. It's about freedom for your neighbors.
What if I told you, ladies and gentlemen, absolutely everything they told you was wrong? Literally everything. I don't think there was a single damn thing they got right. From the origin of the virus, to the danger of the virus, to the efficacy of the solutions they proposed, they were wrong about everything. That's only half the story. The other half is that we were right. How were we right? They were so wrong. Because they were lying? Yeah, more to come.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies and issues with no significance and classism and statism and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure, something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are coming to you live in the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is the link to share. Of course, I hope you're following us on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith, at Real Alex Jones, at AJN Live as well. If you're not on X, you really should be. If for no other reason, then it is a great way to communicate directly with people that you may want to talk to, including us, and tips you send us and all that sort of stuff. I have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be talking about the developments of the Iran negotiations, as well as just a whole swath of stuff. I mean, I've got Theo Vaughn coming out and talking about the data center scam that is. Tiffany Cianci is going to be joining me at 5 p.m. to talk about the new farm bill that's just come out. And of course, she is the, as I've coined her, the bubbly little fairy of death, because every time she comes, she's a very happy, upbeat person. But she also, you know, is keeping an eye on things like the farm bill and seeing what poison pills are being inserted into it, because there always are. And it's infuriating. We also have James Tallarico, the Democrat Senate candidate here in Texas, who is just the most flagrant antichrist figure walking around right now. It's really amazing. His whole thing is pitching himself as a Christian. And then every time you see him talk about Christianity, it's about how he actually believes the complete reverse, the total inversion of what Christianity preaches, but still claims he's preaching lessons of Jesus. I got videos about him. I got a lot of videos to go to. The problem is, you know, whenever I watch Alex's full show, I pretty much watch Alex every single day, at least for an hour or so, but I'm doing my own news gathering. Obviously, things are breaking while he's on air. I want to, you know, be able to cover stuff that, you know, he hasn't seen yet, that sort of stuff. So I don't watch all the time. But today, of course, the Tucker Carlson interview, I was watching a lot before that. And what happens is I just then want to treat my show like a commentary on his show, because, of course, all of the topics he gets into, I feel like we should add to. One of the things is this idea with Tucker Carlson either creating a third party or possibly getting involved in politics somehow. And again, this idea that I also want to punish the Republicans. That wasn't really Tucker Carlson's take, more of a Nick Fuentes style take of, if you're not going to do what we need done for us, we don't have time to give you another chance. We don't have time to, like, well, they screwed us this time, but maybe next time it'll be different. Well, there might not be a next time because of how you screwed us this time. So I'm all for that. But then the flip side is, what am I going to do? Vote for James Tallarico? That's just not an option. That's just not happening in any form, because, and this is the beauty of always having the initiative. This is the beauty of the bad guys, the adversary, the enemy, always launching the attacks and us always having to respond to it. The beauty for them is that the attacks are both real and a distraction. They set it up to where you can't ignore the attack. I can't just ignore the fact that the Democrats are hyper fixated on transgenderism, because, again, if you're watching the Tucker Carlson interview, you know, he sort of brushed off the transgender topic, like maybe they created this specifically as this, you know, artificial division to separate people who would otherwise be aligned. Yeah, probably. I mean, that's certainly an aspect of it. you know, certainly a frustrating aspect of it. But at the end of the day, like, I've got a 5-year-old kid. He's going to school next year. Is he going to be taught about transgenderism? That is a, that's something that actually tangibly affects my life right now and in the immediate future. You can't just ignore that. Again, that's the beauty of, you know, it's the, I just shouldn't say the beauty. From their point of view, it's the beauty of running these types of operations, because you inject something like transgenderism. Yes, it is a distraction. Yes, it is pointless and wholly created out of whole cloth, totally unnecessary. It is a crisis that doesn't need to exist. It's a manufactured point of contention between the American people. Yes, all of that's true, but it's also real. It's also actually happening. It's also something we do actually have to contend with and try to fight back against. Why? Because we're on the defensive, because we're the ones trying to conserve things. And that fundamentally, I think, is the thing we have to get over, is this idea that there's anything worth preserving at this point. That doesn't mean we abandon our traditions, and like what we are trying to build is predicated on the values that existed in the past, but we're not trying to conserve anything because it's already lost, because it's already all gone. So we have to create something new. The trick is, the difficulty here is that the only people who seem to be offering something quote unquote new are the socialists or the communists, whereas the quote unquote conservatives are obsessed with just slowing down the progress of the communist or the socialist as they attempt to remake our whole order. So what we need to do is define what it is that we're trying to create. Now, to me, it is not abandoning the old morals. Like, progressivism as it exists now is this idea that we can remake humanity itself. And it's why it's absurd for the quote unquote progressives, the socialists or the communists, to think that they're at odds with the power structure, when it's the power structure itself that is the engine behind the societal changes that regular people don't want, the average person doesn't want, but that those in power want, because it makes you easier to control. So the progressivism that we're experiencing right now has its font, has its initiation from the likes of Larry Fink and BlackRock, who, you know, are find that our traditional structure of society is a barrier to their absolute control and ownership of everything. Again, this is fundamental. This is metaphysical. This is like, what is the purpose of life? Where are we going to? What are we pursuing? What is the point of all of this? What is the point of the systems that we're running? We can't agree on the functions of the system. We also don't agree what the system should even do. Right? The system, the combination of all of these moving parts, it's like we're sitting here arguing about which tire to use on the car. We should be deciding, where is the car driving to? Why are we building a car? What is the point of this? Now, to me, the point is enumerated and illustrated in the Federalist Papers and the Constitution and the preamble to the Constitution, that what the point of government certainly is, and the point of human, you know, cooperation overall is to provide the freedom for people to pursue their own interests and decide for themselves the destiny that they're pursuing. That's it, right? Just get out of the way. Just facilitate the safety and the peace and the prosperity necessary for people to actually have and then pursue dreams. It's hard to have dreams if you're just wondering where the next meal is coming from, right? You want to keep people, you want to rise people out of the desperate sort of lower function, lower, what's the term, the hierarchy of needs. Like, you want to elevate people up to the higher hierarchy of needs, to where they're not just trying to live off subsistence or having to look over their shoulders and constantly be worried about being murdered by some sort of criminal. Like, that's the whole point. It's not to come in and dictate to you what your life should be like. That, by the way, is a structure of living, is a familial and societal structure that literally has never existed in all of human history. That's what they're trying to create. The Larry Fink, BlackRock, World Economic Forum / socialist communist style of living, there's a reason why they attack the nuclear family. There's a reason why they attack ownership itself, because the way our world is structured is that you're supposed to try to accrue material wealth so that you can pass it on to your children, so that you can build a dynasty, so that you can leave your children off better than you were. You can have and build intergenerational wealth, hopefully hold on to it at the very least, if not, you know, expand it to an even greater degree as the whole of society grows and prospers, the individuals grow and prosper as well. They're doing away with that. They don't want you to be able to pass anything on to your children. They don't want you to receive anything from your parents. They certainly don't want you owning property. I mean, this is kind of an old way of thinking, right? You're going to own the property that you're on. You're going to be the landlord. You're going to be the lord of the manor. I mean, what is this, the 1600s? No, this is just the way that humans are supposed to live. This is the way that we incentivize our fellow Americans to choose the right path, because choosing a shortcut or attempting to screw people over never works out in the end. Like, that's the purpose of our government, is to guarantee that the people that behave correctly are rewarded for it societally, not in a direct way like a social credit score situation, but more in a naturally manifesting way, that those who are trustworthy earn more trust and are trusted more and are given more responsibility. Like, there's a natural function that our society is built to pursue, or a natural course that we're taking. The BlackRock, you know, out of left field progressive ideas to come in and say, actually, nobody's ever going to own a home. You're certainly not going to be able to pass any wealth onto your children. In fact, we're going to confiscate your wealth as soon as you're dead. We're going to make sure that everybody starts off at zero because, well, some people are naturally going to start off at zero. And for you to start off ahead of them, that's kind of unfair. So we're going to enforce a fake, unnatural equality on everybody where, yes, even, and of course, it's pretty difficult to raise up the lower percentile. It's much easier to bring down the top. So it's unfair, though. They write articles telling you that it's unfair that some kids have parents that read to them and other kids that don't. Is their solution to do everything they can to maximize the number of kids who have parents who can and will read to them? Of course not. That would be, how do we solve the underlying dysfunction in order to deal with the consequence of the dysfunction? How do we deal with the sickness, not just patch over the symptoms? The leftist view is the opposite. It's, you have to stop reading to your children because it's unfair to those other kids who don't have parents to read for them. All of this is to say that we don't need to create a new way of life. We don't need to try to figure out how to maintain our, you know, humanity while simultaneously giving up on family, giving up on property, giving up on home ownership, giving up on just everything that has built this country. This is absurd. This is totally unnecessary. This is, in fact, just an obvious trick, a very obvious trick, as we've explained ad infinitum, like ad nauseum. The capitalists have to ruin the country for the communists to have a foothold. You have to have the abuses in order to pitch the radical new formation of society. Now, in the case of BlackRock and Larry Fink, they aren't even really pitching their view. They're just enforcing it without your input, right? They aren't making the case. They aren't going, hey, guys, this whole home ownership thing, it's actually a pain in the butt. It's actually a lot easier just to rent forever. Sure, you'll be paying the same amount that you would be for a mortgage, but at the end of 20 years, instead of owning a house, you'll own absolutely nothing. But it's actually better for you. You don't like having to change your patio lights, right? Well, if you rent, then the landlord will change that light bulb for you. And also, we'll have access to your property whenever we want because we have a key, because you don't actually own it. So we can comply with, you know, commands from the government with or without a search warrant. So there are other, you know, reasons they'd want it too. But they're not pitching it as if it's actually an improvement to your life that you would willingly choose. They know that you wouldn't choose it. Nobody would choose it. If given the choice between being a sovereign, conscious individual who owns a home and dictates the course of their own life, nobody would give that up to be a renting bug person in a box owned by Larry Fink. Nobody would actually make that choice. So they know that. That's why they're not letting you make that choice. That's why they're not putting it to a vote. They're enforcing it on you, whether you like it or not. So the only way to combat this is in a forceful, direct, aggressive, and offensive way. We have to be offensive in this. We cannot be defensive. The defensiveness, the conservative mindset, is what's got us to this point. Again, it's obvious, and I don't need to explain it to you, the ratchet-like system of governmental expansion, that it only ever goes in one direction, like a ratchet. A ratchet, you can spin in one direction, there's no resistance, you try to go the other way, And of course, the tooth stops the gear and it doesn't go that direction. That's essentially where we're at. So if we are the, you know, tooth that stops the ratchet from going backwards, well, or tries to stop it from going forward, we can slow down the progress, but we can never tangibly or effectively or meaningfully roll it back. We have to roll it back. And so in order to roll it back, we have to identify what it is we're trying to pursue. And that is sort of the ultimate point of all of this. That's why I started this talking about how they have the initiative. They are the ones who are setting the board we all are playing the game on. They're the ones who are dictating to us our behavior because we are reacting to their aggression. It has to be the other way around. And this has been maybe the biggest disappointment with the current Trump administration is that for me, and I know a lot of people like me, we all thought that this was the mindset of the Trump administration. He was this break from the Republican Party, a break from the conservative tradition, because he was aggressive, because he did talk about, you know, actively using the government to pursue our ends in a way that conservatives, right wingers in America, have been psyoped out of doing. We've been psyoped into thinking that small government is the only right wing position. It's not. And in an increasingly, you know, consolidated world, it's not even a feasible suggestion at this point. There is no managing the empire of the United States with a small government. That's just not an option. So what you need to do is not even say, like, I don't like welfare. I don't like the welfare state because of how much money it costs and because of the, you know, underlying immorality of it all. That's obviously true, and it's okay not to like it for that, but that's not actually the pitch that's going to work, and it's not actually the solution that's going to fix this. We need radical solutions. We need monumental landscape-shifting changes in how we approach things, and primarily, we have to understand that nobody else is playing by the rules that we play by. Nobody else is concerned about the propriety of their actions, even the legality of their actions. We are hamstrung by these beliefs because we believe them, we understand their value, but they're hamstringing us. So what do we do in this situation? And I think we have to get over the fear that most conservatives have of doing things like using the government to achieve your ends. Out of this, you know, sort of fear of government power as the ultimate evil that should be avoided at all costs. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's helpful. And I could think of a million, I mean, basically every topic that you care to talk about, you could see this phenomenon manifest. But, you know, look at something like DEI, right? You're not going to stop DEI with a suggestion. You're not going to stop DEI with guidelines or with, you know, whatever is anything other than a law that is genuinely enforced. And so the end of all this, like the point of this whole rant is, of course, something I've enunciated over and over again on this show, which is to save America. Really all we need, the one size fits all super solution, is enforce the law ruthlessly. That's it. I just solved all of America's problems in one sentence. Enforce the already existing law with ruthlessness. That's it. Every problem solved immediately. Because this is the trick. People want you to think that there needs to be a discussion about this. They want you to think that there's some sort of problem that needs to be investigated and discussed in order to come to a viable solution. You just throw the criminals in prison. You just punish the people that are doing the wrong thing. I've got examples from this that I'm kind of having a hard time even wrapping my mind around. The governor of Texas is on an interview complaining that Muslims are building a city that they have not been permitted to build, that they do not have permission to build. And it's like, why are you telling us this? Why don't you send police to stop them doing the thing they're not allowed to do? What the hell are you talking about? Why don't you go and you send an order from the government saying stop construction, and you wrap up the construction material in caution tape and you arrest anybody that tries to keep going? There are so many instances like this where it's like, So they're breaking the law. The government admits they're breaking the law. And they're just going to let them keep breaking the law. That's outrageous. Or the H-1B visa scandal, which, of course, you know, ties in, dovetails to the story of Epic City or any of this stuff. It's like there is a law on the books that you have to make a genuine good faith effort to hire an American before you're allowed to hire an H-1B visa. It just is a law that's not enforced. It's just not enforced. So it doesn't matter. So it's not really a law then. So at the end of the day, it's not about trying to conserve anything. It's about trying to remake the country we once had. It's about shedding all of these restrictions, all of these weights that have been tied around our neck, and just reestablishing what we've lost, regaining what has been stolen from us. And we're not going to do that by asking the thieves to steal at a slower rate. We're not going to do that by appealing to the thieves' sense of morality. The only way that this works is if our government is run by people who understand the situation and then ruthlessly pursue our best interests, regardless of outsiders' opinions about it. It's the only solution. It's the only answer. It's the only method by which this system can be saved internally without some sort of major absolute total collapse, which I do not believe is coming, because you can look at places like South Africa or the USSR for that matter, and you can see that very bad systems, very inefficient, very ineffective, very dysfunctional systems can still persist for decade upon decade upon decade, and that's with the constant opposition from countries like America. You know, in the case of the USSR, communism, this ruthless, exploitative, dysfunctional system, it still operated for 80 years with a primary world power in opposition to it, fighting proxy wars against it all over the globe for that entire time. What happens if America falls? There is no other country who will be fighting to free us. What happens if, you know, this feedback loop of chaos and destruction and degeneracy reaches the point of no return? What do we do? What do you do at that point? It's not enough just to stop the aggression from the left. We have to actively destroy it. We have to disenfranchise the people who don't have our best interests in mind. We have to ruthlessly expel everybody that's invaded our country. We have to cancel all of the visas and simply expel them. And once again, anybody telling you, anybody even suggesting that there might be some barrier to achieving any of the most extreme policies that would save America, it's a lie. It's just a lie. This is the most frustrating part, is like we just run up against this barrier of rhetoric that isn't real. There's nothing behind it. There's no substance to it. It's illusionary, but we can't break through it, no matter how hard we try. And at a certain point, we just need to do what we know is necessary. What form that takes, I don't really know. Again, ideally, you'd elect somebody like who Donald Trump presented himself as. If Donald Trump, you know, really did just seize the reins and just hardcore went after the DEI stuff, there wouldn't be DEI, but he didn't, so there is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple at theoliveshowstore.com. You back us, you fund us, you are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at theoliveshowstore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates at theyellowshowstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at theyellowshowstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today, and also buy gifts for friends and family, and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating, level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity-fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible, multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals and non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these t-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776. 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong. Nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 7076 free, defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well, all limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Back, folks. Yeah, we do have a lot of news about COVID. And again, you know, I wish I could be more excited about this. There's some new information coming out. I mean, once again, we're in a situation where we've had the black and white line illustration of what's happened. Now we're filling in the color, right? But it doesn't change the picture that we're looking at. You know, we've got this from Kanoka the Great on X. Why did Fauci's NIAID and USAID send $44 million in U.S. taxpayer funding to the Wuhan scientist studying the risk of bat coronavirus emergence who later became the world's first COVID-19 case? Well, because they were creating a manufactured gain-of-function virus to release on the world. That's why. What do you mean, why? What? Why else? There's only one reason, and we lived through it. It's called the lockdown, COVID-19. So, again, it's nice to actually have the amounts and the money and where it was sent and who it was sent to and why it was sent and how it relates directly, incontrovertibly, to the emergence of COVID and the subsequent cover-up by Anthony Fauci. But what is the point? But what is the point of knowing all of this if nothing is done about it? What is the point of sending a subpoena to Anthony Fauci to force him to come testify and be questioned about this when he's already gotten away with lying to Congress. I mean, one of the things that he would be charged with criminally would be lying to Congress about his involvement with the intelligence agencies and covering up the gain-of-function research that started COVID-19. He lied about that, angrily lied about it, right? Aggressively shouted about how dare you question me. He lied. He lied to Congress right out in the open. Now we're going to subpoena him to go in front of Congress and be asked about that. What? Why would he be truthful to Congress? He literally is, as we speak, getting away with having lied to Congress. So I'm not sure what we expect to get out of him. He'll probably just lie more. He gets away with it. So it's one of these things. Am I happy that Anthony Fauci, like this information's coming out and that he's being subpoenaed by Rand Paul to go testify in front of Congress? Sure, that's better than nothing happening, but not really. Not much. Not much better. Just kind of strange to me. It's kind of like when they fine banks a percentage of the money they've stolen. It's like Wells Fargo ran a scam where they stole $40 million and they've been punished with a fine of $1.5 million. And it's like, okay, so you just let them make $38.5 million. That's not a great punishment. Like, what do you think is going to happen after that? They're going to just factor in $1.5 million in their overhead cost of how to make $40 million. They're going to keep doing the same thing, which of course they do. Maybe not Wells Fargo, but that's the bank that jumps to my mind because I was a victim of their manipulation. I lost a bunch of money. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so every time I overdrafted, it cost me $30 in penalties. They did it to me like four times. Turns out it was because they were illegally shifting around how they processed overdraft fees. But don't worry, I got a check in the mail after the settlement for $4. Okay, so they may have cost me hundreds, but at least I got $4 back. Like that's basically how our government operates at this point. Only with Anthony Fauci, it's even less than that because he has suffered nothing. He has not suffered at all because of what he did, which was, I remind you, released a virus that potentially killed millions of people, locked us down, destroyed a generation of children's mental health as they're forced to isolate from their friends and family. Maybe the worst crime that's ever been committed. I think that's, it would be up there. It would certainly be up there, creating and releasing this virus and then managing the response in such a fragrant, like, I don't even have words for it. I mean, we all lived through it. Hopefully you remember it. Some people don't. But until he's arrested and punished, like, what are we doing here? What is the point of any of this? It's really just a humiliation ritual. You lied to Congress, so now we're going to make you lie to Congress more. And he's going to get up and he's going to smirk confidently. And he's going to say, I have nothing to hide. I'll answer all your questions. What do you have for me? And then he'll lie through his teeth and he'll walk out a free man. What is the point of that? Why are we putting ourselves through this? So again, I got a lot of, you know, breaking news to get to, but I think I actually want to play a video that I was going to play yesterday, but it's one of these things that happens to me when I'm news gathering and I've already got like 80 videos prepared. And then like 5 minutes before the show goes on, I see a new video. And what I'm tempted to do is yesterday, I was thinking about starting the show with this video, but I knew if I started the show with the video, I would stick on the video for probably too long and never get to the actual substance of the news today. But we're going to do it today. We're going to look at the video. It's about empathy. We're going to be instructed. We're going to learn from the leftist how to be empathetic. They're going to teach us. Really, they're going to be shocked and appalled at our lack of empathy for the poor, innocent, downtrodden of the world. Let's go to clip number 23. This is Hollywood actor John C. Reilly talking about what an empathetic person he is. We'll comment on the other side. Let's watch.
You know, if you stand up for human rights, why is that a right or a left thing? Why aren't people on the right wing concerned about human rights? They're human too. This whole thing that like kind of has come into vogue of like empathy trap, you know, it's an empathy
that?
Trap. You know, like that's what Elon Musk says, like empathy is like, oh, don't be fooled by the empathy trap.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, all right, let's go and pause right there. Agenda. Let's go and pause right there, shall we? We got to define terms. I think we have to define terms here, Mr. Riley. What do you mean by human rights? What does that mean? Who is fighting for human rights? Like, in their perception, I guess human rights are like to cross-dress and dance in front of children. Like, that's sort of where they're at on human rights. To me, human rights are things like the ability to speak freely. It's things like not being arrested for showing anger at the person who raped you. Like, that's what's happening in Europe. You think John C. Reilly gives a damn about any of that? Like, where there's actually human rights being horribly taken advantage of, destroyed, violated continuously, the left has absolutely no concern whatsoever. Absolutely none. They have taken the term human rights and applied it to all sorts of things that are not rights, human or otherwise. They're benefits from the government or whatever else. But then he talks about the empathy trap and he tries to explain it to this woman who is shocked and appalled at this concept because, of course, when you completely misrepresent, deliberately misrepresent a concept to be something entirely different than what it is, yeah, it can seem appalling. And I can't, I really don't think these people can be that stupid. You can't be this stupid. I guess we'll let him continue, but you're talking about the empathy trap is how he phrases it. I don't think I've ever heard that. I've heard of suicidal empathy. We'll go back to John C. Reilly, and then I'll try to explain to him why having empathy for people that are doing wrong to you is not actually a virtue. Having empathy with criminals and scam artists is just called being a sucker. It's not called being empathetic. It's called being tricked. It's called being taken advantage of. You're not a good person because you get taken advantage of, you absolute morons. Here's John C. Reilly's explanation of what the empathy trap is.
Holy.
Don't start feeling bad for so-and-so. They're on their own thing. Look out for number one. Like, it's like, wait a minute. Empathy is not a trap. Empathy is a superpower.
That's right.
That's what makes human beings exceptional, our ability to like look outside of ourselves. We're not an alligator trying to just get the next fish. You know, we're human beings. We can relate to something that's not us.
Okay, let's pause it right there. Couple things. He doesn't actually have empathy. He projects his own mindset onto other people and then acts as if they share. It's like actually the opposite of, it's actually almost like a disability that makes you incapable of empathy. He doesn't empathize with the working class white people in this country or anywhere in Europe that are, I don't know, being subjected to criminal rape gangs for decades on end. He has no empathy for those people whatsoever. He has empathy for the rape game criminals. And he has this idea that by talking about empathy, suicidal empathy or the empathy trap, that you're demonizing empathy. I don't know how to explain this stuff to an idiot. I mean, if you can't understand how empathy can be used against you, what are you talking about? Okay, so here's an example. One time when I was like 18, I was at a party at a friend's house. He was going to U of H, so he lived in the Third Ward, which is a very dangerous neighborhood in Houston. And we were outside, and his front yard had a little fence around it, and we're all hanging out in the front yard, drinking, smoking, whatever. And this woman comes up to the fence, and she's like crying, and she's like disheveled, and she's like, oh, help me, my husband's beating me, help me. And so I'm the one right there by the gate, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, you gotta let me in. I'm like I'm my husband beat me, and I ran away from him. And I didn't believe her. She didn't look like she'd been beaten. I don't know where she like came out of the bushes, literally. And I'm just like, what are you talking about, lady? You're not coming in here. If you're really in danger, we'll call the cops, and we'll wait here by you. You know, we'll make sure nobody messes with you until the cops come. But like, if you're not coming in, like, what are you talking about? And it was just all, the whole thing was very suspicious. Now, if I'd been an idiot and a sucker, God only knows. I don't know why she was trying to get in. But by the way, when I was like, no, I'll call the, if you're in danger, I'll call the cops and you can stand right here and we'll wait with you. But like, I'm not going to let you in this party. That's not going to happen. And she immediately stopped crying, stood up and was like, F you, and walked away, right? Because she wasn't really in danger, because it was a trick, because she was trying to play on my empathy, trying to get me to believe that she needed help. I don't even know what she wanted. Steal things, like God only knows. But she wasn't running from a husband that was beating her. She wasn't in danger and in need of my empathy. She was using my empathy, or trying to do something that I wouldn't have wanted her to do, right? Is this not unbelievably obvious to everybody? That if I tell you this story, that doesn't mean I'm like, so therefore, you should be unempathetic to everybody. Therefore, if somebody really is in danger, you should spin on them and walk over them on your path to glory. Like, what? No, it's just, if somebody's actually in danger, you do everything you can to help them. If they're not actually in danger, you see their pleas and their you know, trying to get you to believe they are in danger. That's a trick. It's an insult, really. It's actually just evidence of their lack of character and more reason to not trust them or have anything to do with them or listen to them about anything. Is this not fundamental to being a human being? That having empathy for people that are lying to you is just being a sucker? Is this not obvious? Is it not obvious that empathy is different than sympathy? We have two words for them because they're not the same thing. In other words, I can empathize with a criminal. Absolutely. I can put myself in that mindset. I can put myself in the mindset of a murderer. I've gotten mad enough that I've wanted to kill something before. I can put myself in the mindset of somebody who goes over that edge. It's not hard to empathize with bad people doing criminal things. That doesn't mean that you believe them or think it's okay what they're doing. You just can put yourself in their mindset and understand rationally why they're doing what they're doing. Sympathy is when you agree with them, when you have a fellow feeling with them, when you think you're right, he was right to do that sort of thing. So, in other words, I can empathize with a Somali family coming over to America and starting a fraudulent daycare service where they bilk millions of dollars out of our coffers. I can empathize with that. I really can. I can empathize with what it's like to be a despicable con artist scammer and to find a field of suckers to harvest. I can imagine exactly what it would be like to think these stupid Americans are going to open up their door to me. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to take them for everything they're worth. And they're so dumb that even if I get caught, I'll just call them racist and they'll leave me alone. See, when you empathize with somebody like that, you aren't on their side. You don't suddenly think, well, okay, so I guess it's good what they're doing. You recognize, oh, this mindset is evil. Oh, I can empathize with what is motivating this person and what is informing their worldview. As I empathize with it, I understand the feeling of being an evil, dirtbag, scum person that deserves to be expelled forcibly. That's what real empathy is. Real empathy is understanding that not everybody thinks like you. See, John C. Reilly, if he tries to empathize with a Somali person, he's going to be thinking, what would make me leave a country? What would make me, John C. Reilly, seek solace in another country? It would have to get really bad, and I'd have to be really in a tough spot. And when I went there, I would be so thankful for the people that brought me in. But that's not how these people are thinking. See, you're empathizing with yourself. You're empathizing with your own projection onto them, projecting your own mindset onto a situation in which they are thinking entirely differently. If you actually empathize, if you actually put yourself in their shoes, you'd look down and go, oh, these are the shoes of a con artist scammer that doesn't deserve my sympathy at all. Again, is this complicated? Is this hard to understand? Empathy is only ever, like empathy in the way that he's describing it, is only ever useful if the person thinks like you and is you, essentially. The empathy he's describing, it's not empathy. It's something else entirely. It is a solipsistic mirror projection of his own soul on everybody else. And he's a weak little quisling. So I guess he assumes everybody else is like that. But again, it's this idea that if you don't willingly give up everything that is asked of you from whoever asks it, you're an alligator person that only sees the next meal in front of you as you pursue it, blind to wider humanity. If he actually was in tune with the real, you know, I'm a overly empathetic person at times. Like it's embarrassing. I can't help but like really strongly feel what other people are feeling very often. And yeah, it's a benefit in certain regards, but it's also, you know, there are times where it's not very useful. But that means that I can empathize with both the tragedy that's gotten people in situations that they don't deserve. I can also blame them in part if they deserve blame for how they got there. But as I look around, like I see the, you know, overworked mom of two that's struggling to, you know, keep food on her family's table and who's been screwed over by iteration after iteration of trade deal and regulation that has made it more difficult for her to get or keep a job. I can see the way her, you know, kids are abused for their race in school. And then I can see right down the street that there's some Somali guy with four new cars and a brand new house paid off in full. And I can see, okay, I have empathy and I feel sad for and I feel sorry for and I want to help the overworked single mother who's just trying to keep things together. And I can have disdain and even hatred for the person who is taking advantage of the situation, is making everything worse for everybody. Even if, and here's the clincher, even if that single mother doesn't complain and the rich millionaire scam artist is constantly crying crocodile tears, it doesn't matter to me, because I'm not empathetic like John C. Reilly wants me to be empathetic, wants me to believe the lies of the scam artist and have disdain for the actual victims, because his view of empathy is a literal inversion of how it should actually be wielded these days. Back to John C. Reilly here.
Power. And it's also the cornerstone of civilization. The fact that we stay at the red light and don't just zoom out because we want to get through the life faster, because what will happen? Well, we might smash into someone. Well, you don't know that person. Yeah, but I still don't want to smash into them. You know, like those are the building blocks of civilization. That's the agreement that we treat. I mean, it's very Catholic too. Do unto others, yeah. You know, treat your brother as you would treat yourself. You know, like.
And to your point about the right
wing, it's crazy that we have to argue for these things right now.
Yeah, it's
that's a really upside down world feeling.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I mean, it's crazy that he uses that example, the red light. Like you all stop at the red light. Like that's not really empathy either. Again, he's kind of confused. He's like, but then you might crash. Like you have to be empathetic. No. How do you explain this? I mean, it's especially interesting for me because I have this very distinct memory of living in D.C. Like, I've never had this problem in Texas. As long as I've lived here, it's always been just a matter of course. The lights go out, there's a big storm, the red lights are blinking, whatever it is, and everybody just automatically, you drive to the front, you stop, you treat it like a four-way stop. It's not hard, it's not complicated. Everybody does it appropriately, and everybody gets through. It's about understanding that by, you know, submerging your own desires beneath what's best for the group, it's better for everybody, and you do it willingly and without coercion. And I remember being in D.C., and I'd never seen it before, but time and time again, the power would go out, there'd be no red lights, and it would, and you could almost see it. It's like, okay, these people aren't even really conscious of what they're doing. It's just the car in front of them goes, so they go. And it's like they're driving so aggressively because they're like, ah, screw it, I'm just not waiting, I'm going to go and screw everybody else. They're just not thinking. They see the car in front of them go, and they go, okay, I guess we must be going. And they go also. And then the car behind them go. And then suddenly you're sitting there at what should be a four-way light, and you're just watching this endless stream of cars crossing because, well, if nobody's going to stop them and, you know, hey, the car in front of me is doing it, I might as well do it too. And there's this herd mentality that takes over. And again, I've never seen that in Texas, but I saw it over and over again in the Northeast when people would just do that. And that is sort of at the heart of it. That is what liberty is about. And if you want to say it's what, you know, the civilization itself is about, fine. But that's not even really empathy. That's just basic understanding of second order effects. And that's a matter of intelligence, not necessarily empathy. And the reason why that attitude has collapsed in this country is a matter of diversity it's a matter of division overall, kind of the same words, but when you don't have fellow feeling with your fellow American, when you go, well, I'm going to stop for this light, but nobody else is, you kind of feel like a sucker, and you're actually kind of incentivized to run the red light because everybody else is going to, and you can't afford to be left behind. There's a feedback loop of criminality that we're engaged in right now that has very little to do with empathy, but has a lot to do with people being conscienceless, without conscience, and incapable of thinking for themselves. That's the real issue here. And again, you know, John C. Reilly, ask him about things that are actually happening. Ask him about people actually being affected by forces beyond their control. And he has nothing but disdain and probably even hatred for a lot of them. But he will preen endlessly about empathy, even though, as far as I can tell, he doesn't even really understand what the word means. So once again, when I see somebody run a red light because they just don't know any better, like I can empathize and go, okay, that person's brain needs to be out of my country. Whoever is operating like that is a danger to me and my family and needs to be expelled immediately. I think that's all I wanted to say about that. This idea that, and you know, I don't even know how you deal with it, 'cause it's like, the problem with suicidal empathy is like maybe the biggest problem in the world right now is all these people who have endless empathy and sympathy and feel sorry for people that don't deserve it and have never done anything, you know, worthy of being treated that way. That's like the biggest problem in the world. But then you try to explain that to people and they're just like, so you don't like empathy? So you don't think other people are people? And it's just like, no, I'm saying other people are scam artists. They're con artists. They're tricking you. They're using your empathy to destroy you. Can you empathize with that? Can you empathize with a criminal? Can you empathize with a con artist? Because I can. And when I empathize with the con artists, I look around at people like John C. Reilly and I think, what a giant sucker. What an absolute moron. I'm going to go tell him that I'm just a poor, innocent refugee. Can I have money? And he'll probably give it to me because he's so stupid. That's their version of empathy to you. See, they actually can empathize with you. They understand exactly how you think. They understand your mindset. That's why they can take advantage of it so easily. Wake up, John C. Reilly. You freak.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free, just a classic Betsy Ross flag, 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You're going to promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
You If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.